Your Money Replay from Money FM 89.3. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
This is Money and Me. It's front page of the Straits Times. Over 8,000 new flats on offer. It's the year's biggest HDB launch. Among them, some 4,700 BTO units, mostly in Tengah, but also in the mature estates of Ang Mo Kio and Tampines. Applications for the flats close next Monday. Some 95% of the four-room and bigger flats are going to be set aside for first-timer families. That's up from the current quota of at least 85% in non-mature estates. So today, all things to do with money and making your decisions in the property market in light of this news that's out will help you make sense of the new flats on offer, and we'll take a step back as well in terms of the decisions you can start to think through about weighing between a BTO and EC or resale flat. Joining me, Kenneth Liu is CEO of Seedly. How are you this morning?
Good, thanks for having us again.
Welcome back. Darius Chung is co-founder and CEO of 99.co. Darius, welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us again. And Kenneth Fong is editor at Seedly. Kenneth, I read you say you are the closest thing to an adult on the Seedly team.
Yeah. The team is pretty young. So in terms of like our life stages, yeah, I'm pretty much like the closest you'd find to an adult.
Yeah. And you have a four-room BTO.
Oh, yes, I do.
In one of my favorite places, Bedok, next to a great market.
Yeah. It's Fengshan.
What did I have there? Some of my favorite foods are there, including like some mala noodle.
Carrot cake.
That's it. I live for carrot cake.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move to how much money we should have on hand, guys. So for people out there, it's their first home and they're thinking, do I go for BTO, EC, resale flat? That I want to make a smart choice. What do you say?
Yep. So I think that's a very immediate question that most people would have when thinking about their first home. So I think just looking at the example with the launches yesterday, you would see that, you know, a BTO 4-room in a mature estate would cost you more than 400,000, whereas a BTO in a non-mature estate like Tengah, for example, would cost you around $300,000. So I think that's a good benchmark. And I think always start with like how much down payment you need to actually put up as well, which is at about 5%, and it comes from your CPF, OA, your ordinary account as well. So always think about that. And 5 years later, when you get your key, the next 5% comes in. You need to pay it up, and then it goes on from there. So that's for BTO.
5 years, but some are completed in 2 years.
It depends on the projects. Again, you know, there's all these tools that you can use online to see how fast your BTOs will actually come in as well. So for me, I got my BTO in Ubi. Will be in 2021. So I actually just booked my flat last year, and then I will have to wait there about 3-4 years before I actually get my flat when I move in.
You booked your flat last year?
Yes.
2021, it's going to be ready.
Yes, correct. So that's about,
A lot of forward planning required,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
If you're looking for a BTO.
Yeah, which is actually a good thing because I think you can plan your finances. So right now we have a renovation budget. So this ties in with personal finance. So every month, me and my fiancé, we are contributing to our renovation budget. So when the time comes, we don't actually need to take up a renovation loan. Yeah. So that's a way to think about, you know, a longer lead time, but you get more time to plan.
I was very optimistic. I just want a flat like immediately. I want the keys in my hand tomorrow. So, Adarius, what do you think about in terms of things you should be thinking through to prepare between a BTO, EC, resale flat?
Yeah, each has its strength. So a BTO is when you're young, it's the most affordable. You've got lots of grants, especially if you make less than $14,000. There's plenty of grants and save you a lot of money, and it's very good returns. But over the long term, EC actually gives you the best capital gains. Over 15 years, in fact, EC give you 130% capital gain over the last 15 years versus HDB BTOs versus only 81%.
Wow.
So definitely ECs have the best capital gains. However, resale is also very popular because of its ability to control. So if you are maybe a little bit older, if you're having children, maybe you're buying your second HDB, which is a resale, you want control on timing. So you want to know when you can get the place. Maybe now, for example, then you only have resale as an option.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you want a location. So I want to be near a particular school. Marine Parade, for example, is a very popular resale market for HDB because it's near Taunan, within 1 km.
Great school.
So great school. So, and that's a very, very popular resale market for HDB. And you can control the location. And compared to buying a condo or landed property there, a resale flat is much, much more affordable.
In terms of space that you get as well, right?
Exactly.
What sort of checklists do people need to think through before they purchase their first property? Kenneth, you want to jump in?
I think the biggest thing that you have to think about is price. I mean, that's a given, right? Pick your first property. So, okay, so we're talking about like the BTOs, right? So, okay, so first and foremost, price is always a very big thing. So I have like, you should only buy pretty much as much house that you can comfortably afford. So a very good example would be, yeah, so like one of my friends, so what they did was that they took a CPF housing loan and then they realized that their monthly CPF contributions, it's not enough to cover the monthly installments. Mm-hmm. But what they can do is that their combined income allows them to do cash top-ups.
Okay.
Yeah, so they technically can afford the house lah. But right. The problem is that when he suffered a personal accident and then he had to take like quite a long unpaid leave from work. Yeah, so that's when they realized that their finances were quite strained.
Mm.
Yeah, so which is why I think like when a lot of people ask me about like, okay, so what's the first thing that I should think about? Want to get my flat, right?
Yeah.
Or property, for anything, for example.
Mm.
I think price is a very huge thing. You need to buy a house that you're comfortable with affording.
Only buy as much house as you can
only
afford.
Only as much, yeah. as much as you can.
That's my line of the day.
Correct. I mean, like a lot of people think that, yeah, you know, oh, it's my first home, so like I should go like buy as big a house as I can get because like that's the one that will give me like the most capital appreciation, right?
Yeah.
But I think that's not always the case. I think like there is, I think you've seen some examples of like, I think Duxton at Pinnacle. Yeah, these are all
what
like,
what happened? Tell me.
Maybe like to share more about like, I mean, it's not technically the kind of like HDB BTO flat. It's like it's a very special one-off type of flat, right? And then people always get this idea that, oh, I should buy like the biggest 5-room and then that will give me like the most capital appreciation. But yeah,
we hear all sorts of stories actually both ends of the spectrum. On one end, you've people really stretch their affordability and really live on a budget in order, like they eat basically Maggie Me every day just to afford that place. But sometimes they are actually grateful for it in the end as well, because Pinnacle now actually has, looking back, has seen a lot of appreciation.
Mm.
So some are grateful, some say, well, that was too hard a life, I didn't need to do that. What we recommend is about 25% of your income. You can stretch that a little bit more. We wouldn't say how much it should
be. Does
that
include the OA or excludes the OA?
Including OA, because you typically would pay for your property with OA.
With the OA, so
yeah,
25%.
So including OA, 25% of your income goes into spending on property. But I think the thing that a lot of people forget is that there's a lot of other things on top of the property price itself. Reno, for example, being one of them. Sometimes you don't think about Reno until it comes.
Yeah.
That's too late. So plan ahead. So
plan
that's what you need to pay attention to. Yeah. So ask, check out Kenneth, Sydney's blog. They've got lots of tips on to teach you how to plan ahead.
Okay, let's talk about returns. ROI. People think the larger I have in terms of home size, the more money I'm going to make, because Singapore is tiny. There's all this pressure on space. So what do you say in terms of returns of investments? What are the differences between 3-room, 4-room and 5-room?
Maybe I can take that.
Kenneth, please.
Okay. So you go to the Silly SG, right? And then you look at under our Q&A section. If you click on, or you just type search HDB BTO, you're going to find like a lot of questions there about people asking, okay, is my first home actually my an investment?
Mm.
Is it at home? Should I go for like a 3-room, 4-room, like
but
what's
the
best?
I think they want
best?
It all.
Yeah,
so they like, want it to be a home and they want it to be a smart investment. Should they sell in 3 or 4
years? Okay, but let's say if we put on the hat of like, hey, we're going to think that this is just purely an investment. I mean, I've looked at 99 Coast. They have like a researcher report. Yeah, so like way back, they did this research for 15 years, basically from 04 all the way to 19.
Okay.
Basically, the results show that for a 3-room HDB flat, it appreciates around like 69%.
Wow.
And then for a 5-room HDB flat, it appreciates around also about the same, about 68.57%. Whereas for a 4-room flat, it actually appreciates about 78%. So you can see that between these three, right, the 4-room flat is actually the one which appreciates the most.
Mm-hmm.
And even on the ground, like a common sentiment like between me and my friends, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like I just did a simple poll with a couple of my friends. Most of them actually all went for the 4-room flat.
Yeah.
And these are all like young couples. So maybe they may or may not be considering having children in the future. But I think like 4-room is a pretty good in between, because like a 5-room flat is probably too big for a young Singaporean couple. And then like a 3-room is probably too small if you are eventually going to have like your parents, or if you're going to have kids like live with you as well. So like I think a 4-room is a very good middle ground for you to get, and that's where like the market is usually targeted as well for 4-room flats. Yeah, but I think like what Darius mentioned as well, it's more than just flat size. I think the location also plays like a very huge role in appreciation of property. So I think one of the good examples would be like the northeast side, so like District 19 or District 19. Almost Singaporeans would know it as like Hougang, Punggol and Sengkang. Okay, so I'm using Hougang, Punggol and Sengkang because even it's the largest population in northeast, even though Seletar is technically like the regional center. So looking at northeast, right, the 3-rooms there, they appreciate around 84.6%, and then your 4-rooms, they appreciate around 80%, whereas the 5-rooms, yeah, so it's not that great. It's about 65.2. I mean, it's good lah, but it's not as great as your 3-room and your 4-room.
Yeah.
And then if you look at some place like a little bit more mature, More popular as well. If you look at the east, at District 18, you have Pasir Ris and Tampines. Three rooms, they appreciate around 66.3%. Your four rooms, they appreciate 67.2%. And your five rooms, again, not that great, 62.5%. So you notice that from the numbers that I'm quoting, right, for both districts, the three and the four room flats, right, they actually appreciate more than the five rooms in general. Mm. Yeah. And okay, so bring it back again to this whole narrative that Singaporeans have about million-dollar flats in Pinnacle at Duxton, right? And that these are the kind of flats that have, like, the biggest resale prospects. So I should always aim to get, like, a five-room flat because that's, like, the one that's going to be, like, the biggest house. I can sell it very easily. But the problem with this is that, like, Pinnacle at Duxton, for example, right? These are all examples of premium BTOs, DBSS, rare mansionettes that are not the same, technically not the same as, like, your regular five-room BTO that you can get in, like, this November's launch. So if you are a long-term buyer, yes, it makes sense to get a very big house. But if you are like a, if you're thinking more of like an investment, like this is like a placeholder home, the stepping stone for you to get to like maybe like a condo or to a larger HDB flat, right? Then maybe you might want to consider like a smaller unit instead because they appreciate better. There's a better chance of a higher appreciation. I mean, obviously, depending on like location as what Darius has mentioned. Maybe it's near a school or something like that. Mm. And there's a lower initial cash outlay as well.
Okay, guys, question from a listener. What is each of your readings of the new flats that are currently on offer? Over 8,000 on offer is the year's biggest HDB launch. People have till Monday to make the decision. What is your reading of, you know, what's on offer?
Sure. So I would think of the idea of the capital appreciation piece, right? When you look at the non-mature, which is now Tengah. So Tengah's is the non-mature estate in the current launch, right? And you compare it a few years back, 6-7 years ago with Punggol. So Punggol back then, no one looked at Punggol. The prices were even lower than this. A four-room back then, 200 plus thousand. But right now, you look at the appreciation of that Punggol estate compared to today, when you know all the ABC, the active, beautiful and clean waterways were built. There's waterway mall that's built there. So all the amenities started popping up. And right now, you know, you can actually get a resale for a Punggol flat at 400 plus to 450K.
Wow.
So that's a very nice appreciation. So if you think of it as value investor kind of point of view, then Tengah could be something that you could look at.
Okay.
Because Ang Mo Kio is expensive, but immediately you get your amenities, you're closer to town and things like that. So something to consider.
This is the third batch of Tengah flats launched. Prices starting from 100,000, excluding grants for that two-room flexi flat, over 400,000 for a third-generation flat. You know, people like to know that they can head to 99.co or Seedly and get these breakdowns of how much the flats have appreciated. Still a bit of unknowns in Tengah. What do you make of that area?
I think the historical trend has been that whatever the government develops, it tends to go well. So Tengah is a very clear area of development. So I think over the long term, if you can, if you are willing to stay there for 10, 15 years, for certain it's definitely going to appreciate. I think there's no question about it. And I think in particular, if you are starting out young, so for example, if your combined income is less than $9,000, you have $80,000 grants that you can take. So that's really making it a no-brainer for any BTO to begin with. Actually, it doesn't even matter what the location is. Any BTO is going to be
a
good buy.
But
Tengah in particular, if you are staying there and willing to live there and wait for it to develop, it's definitely going to be a good gain.
Great insight here. Kenneth Fong, editor at Seedly. Darius Chung, you just heard him, co-founder and CEO of 99.co. Kenneth Liu is CEO of Seedly. So BTO versus resale. A BTO flat often seen as very popular with couples for a first-time flat. Widely thought of as cheaper as a resale flat. We have seen a sort of a tepid resale market, though, and prices falling because of these cooling measures. So what do you think that couples should look at a resale over a BTO? What are some conditions where that would be a smart move?
Certainly, I think when you have specific requirements, some of which, for example, buying a property, I think, is not just a financial investment. It's definitely a big part of it, but a lot of times it's also about living well, living correctly. If you are planning to have children, you definitely need correct size for it. One child, two child, you kind of need to have the correct size for the flat. Second, location. So if you need to go into a good school, like we've spoken just now, you want to be near a good school. And if you have, for example, parents you want to be taking care of, you might find a good price somewhere else, maybe by BTO. But if it's not near your parents and you take half an hour to travel each way every day, and that's time is money as well.
Oh, I like that. So, yes, it is.
So certainly, I think those considerations need to be taken into account. The other thing to consider is also that for resale, if you take your time, if you're not in a hurry, and hunt for a good one that is to your taste, you will save, what, 50 grand on reno as well?
Reno, yeah.
You could, unless you want to redevelop it.
Yeah, I have a personal friend as well. Yeah. Amazingly nice, like, renovated home. Yeah. And it's industrial luxe. So if you guys know the idea of industrial
luxe.
Grey and then, like, gold and silver. So everything
bricks,
came... And bricks as well.
But you mean it was already
Resale, because resale, if you hunt for the right one. And often they don't build that into the price.
Yeah.
So it's almost, like, free. So you get a freebie.
His previous owner was a designer. So it's just nice.
There needs to be a website that sells flats previously owned by designers.
Maybe you should be able
That's a good idea.
Toggle, you can toggle.
All right.
Okay, this is a question that's come up on Seedly before. When is the best time to apply for an HDB BTO flat?
Well, actually, now.
Now before Monday.
Yeah, because like the deadline. Yeah. So now is a good time to start
yesterday and yesterday's.
Yeah.
I think in terms of their planning, you know, how far ahead.
I'd say that. Okay, I mean, besides the obvious fact that like the deadline is like next Monday, right? So I think it's important to have your timeline in place.
Yeah.
So like for me, for example, right? It's so my wife, then girlfriend. So she was the first to approach me, tell me about this particular BTO. I mean, like, we were serious. We were 4 years into our relationship.
Okay.
But, I mean, like, it never occurred to me that we should be looking at houses yet. But so she came one day to me and told me that, oh, you know, there's this particular BTO that's going to be at Bedok, which is very close to her parents'
place. Where did she learn about this?
I think it was like her friends or something. Like, they were talking about this. I mean, like, you know, kind of at the age where girls like start talking.
Dream houses.
Yeah, in a way I want to live and stuff like this. So, So I mean, like, we figured, okay, you know what? Let's give it a shot. Because, I mean, like, I knew that it was around 3 to 5 years for completion. Right now, it's much faster. It can be as short as 2 years, in fact, sometimes, depending on the estate and the project. So I think this is a very uniquely Singaporean problem because of the way that you need to plan. So sometimes the BTO application, right, it takes the romance out of, like, your wedding proposal.
So you hadn't proposed yet when she came to you?
I didn't, So when she came to me, right, it was like, you know what? It looks like a good place. This is potentially where we want to live. Why don't we just try? So we did. We applied for the thing. And then, so we got it. Yeah, so my timeline was kind of like we applied in 2012, and then but she kind of already knew that. I mean, technically, I had to propose to her, I mean, not that I'm regretting it.
Of course.
I mean, I love you very much. If you're listening to this, I mean, then I proposed in 2016. We got married in early 2017, and we collected our keys in late 2017, and then it's only in 2018 was when we actually moved in. So as you can see from the point that we applied all the way till...
What was the date of the application point again?
It was around... It's the November 2012 BTO That's launch.
Tremendous amount of forward thinking.
So that was like a almost 5 to 6 years before we actually got married, settled down, and we got our own place to call home. So I think for a lot of couples out there, if you're listening to this, right, I think the best time to apply is now, yes, obviously for the deadline. But I think it's highly recommended that you do so, right, only when both of you are committed and in a very serious relationship. Yeah, because the problem with getting a BTO or applying for the BTO, right, it's, let's say if you, touch wood, break up after you apply, it's, maybe you just lose the $10 application fee. But if you are deeper into the process, so much so that you even, like, maybe up to key collection, right? So that's when it gets really expensive. Mm. Yeah, so I worked it out before in a separate article. That's on our Seedly blog. You can have a look at it if you're interested. A 4-room BTO flat, you could potentially lose up to about 78K.
Whoa.
Yeah, if you're going to break up after key collection. So this is not something that, it's not a decision that you should take lightly. Especially because when you're much younger now, you're thinking, and you're considering your finances. So really think hard. If both of you are committed and you know that you're going to stay together, then go for it. If you're not sure, Maybe just wait a while.
So people are writing out their applications already because they know applications for this biggest HDB launch close Monday. So they're writing and they're listening to us at the same time. And they're wondering, should I wipe out my CPF to buy my first home? Because a lot of people are, you know, do come up to me after the show saying, I would like to just pay off my home entirely and not live in debt. Is that a good idea?
I would think now there's a new ruling that just came out last year. You can keep 20,000 in your CPF OA. So actually, my recommendation would be not to wipe it out entirely, because you never know. Maybe you want to take a sabbatical and you want to have that bunch of money there as well that will actually allow you that flexibility to
service your mortgage.
Service your mortgage, so you don't have to come out with your own cash. So I think that rule was implemented for that reason as well, because a lot of people back then were doing very weird stuff to move their money from CPF OA to CPF IS to invest and then try and take it out after that. So I think CPF was noticing that and they're like, okay, why not I just set, you know, an amount that you can keep before, you know, you wipe everything out.
Darius, what are your opinions on, you know, using everything you have to pay off for your loan, or do you think it's a good idea to take a bank loan?
I think from a pure technical standpoint, it makes sense to use your use a CPF OA account. However, it all depends on your personal financial discipline and your financial goal. So, for example, if you are a very diligent saver, you say that, hey, I'm okay to wipe out my OA account because out of my other income, cash income, I'm saving a good amount. I'm investing a good amount. I'm a good investor. I'd rather have cash to invest and get better return than what an OA account can give me. So that then it makes sense to wipe it out. But if you are not quite a good, quite a disciplined person, I think it's more of a habit person, habit thing. If you have more, the more cash you have in your bank account, the more you spend, then perhaps you would want to save some in your OA account. It's kind of enforced savings. It's not a bad idea either.
Love that. Okay, so guys, before we wrap up, I want to ask you, this is a great one, HDB EC. Have we looked at the capital gains and the differences in appreciation in terms of ECs and how they're doing over time?
Yeah, certainly. 15 years, you can look this up on 99.co researcher report. You can find it. ECs appreciated 130%, HDB around 80%. So there's a 50% difference. But
so
both are great.
ECs,
like, you're doubling your money twice, either ways, on average. So over the last 15 years, now this is not an indication that in the next 15 years you'll do the same, but generally speaking, we are bullish on the property market, continue to do well, and especially with grants, you're definitely making money anyway. So ECs were doing 131.5% and HDBs was doing 81.6%.
Great to have those figures. There are contrarian people who don't believe that parking your money in property is a good idea.
Actually, on that note, I think the problem with ECs is that there are not many good launches. So you get
one
a year. Right, so I think for the year when I was applying last year, there was 100 pumps. Was it 2017, 2018? There was this Serangoon North EC that was 8:1 oversubscribed. So 8 couples were applying for one unit. And that was crazy, crazy balloting. And I think, simply because there aren't enough good ECs that is out in the market right now. A lot more condos and, of course, BTOs as well.
Okay, final words of advice, guys, on money and property for our listeners today.
Maybe I'll start. So I think the big one is to apply as soon as possible if you are committed with your loved one. I will always get hounded by my fiancé for not applying earlier because I tried 7 times. So that's the truth is I tried 7 times, and on my 8th time I went to my MP as well.
So
it works.
I'm just glad you have a home to start your life.
So it's really a luck of the draw, right?
Okay.
You have to work hard to choose the and go through the $10 process.
A lot of smart women, you guys know.
Lucky we're lucky guys.
Lucky guys. I can tell.
Well, since both of them talking about once you're committed, you know, be committed early, apply early. Apply early is true, because if you apply early when you're young and income is lower, you have a lot more grants. So it really changes the game, because in terms of numbers really does work out. However, what I would say, being a slightly older person, is, well, if you run into trouble in a relationship, you know, fix it, right? Splitting up is expensive, so that's my advice. Don't break up easy, because it's very expensive, so try to fix it.
I'm glad we've ended on a note of love. I'm coming to visit you, Kenneth, because you're staying next to a market with great carrot cake. I wonder if your wife knew that when she decided that was the place.
Probably part of her. She's a real foodie as well, so she knows her stuff.
She's smart. Thank you, guys. Kenneth Liu, CEO of Seedly. Darius Chung, co-founder and CEO of 99.co. Kenneth Fong, editor at Seedly. Great show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before acting on the information on Money FM,
Please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.